There is an ongoing argument in the personal finance space about whether or not politics or race should be brought into this whole conversation about money. Many personal finance content creators will bring up the actions that we can all take to better our money. Actions such as paying our bills on time, managing our debt loads effectively, using our credit cards wisely, and more. Basically, their argument is that the conversation should be really focused on our habits with our money. And I get it. If you can manage your money well and yourself well, you can basically grow your retirement savings, you can pay off your debt, so on and so forth. Like, that totally makes sense. But with that in mind, I find that people are really reluctant to talk about the other 20% of money. You know, the stuff that you can't control, such as being hired and getting paid a lower wage than less qualified colleagues, or discovering months later or years later that you were paid less than your colleague with less experience or qualifications. And in fact, I had a friend who shared that story with me a couple of weeks ago, and she decided to leave the organization after about 5 years of working for it. Or you're trying to buy a home and get a home loan in the Chicagoland area, and you're wondering why no one that you know is getting approved for a mortgage. Like, what is going on? You think that it might be because you're Black, but you're like, well, maybe I'm being crazy. Like, maybe this is crazy that I'm thinking this way. Then your thoughts are verified when a study is published in the spring of 2020, basically confirming your intuition. Here's the thing. The reality is 20% of money experiences are influenced by other people, and that matters. Think about it. In an election, when a 3% margin of error is the difference between winning or losing, that matters. Or the 3.5% rule, where basically you can change the world that you live in based on 3.5% of people taking peaceful action and protesting, as we've seen with the Black Lives Matter movement. That 3.5% is a big deal, but 20%, that's huge. 20% of your financial life can make or break your financial world. And let's call it what it is. It's access. Access to the things that you need to improve your financial life. In this episode, I want to reflect on access versus habit and why white women and people of color are creating communities that address this issue. It's not happening because it doesn't exist. These things aren't being created because access is easily had. They're being created because there's an issue. So in order to get to the show notes, make sure you go to michelleismoneyhungry.com/access versus habit. Again, that is michelleismoneyhungry.com/access versus habit. And you'll spell out versus. This episode is sponsored by Make Money with eBooks Academy. If you want to write a book and you're super excited about getting your words out there in the world, but really stressed about the whole process and you don't know where to begin, make sure you go to Make Money with eBooks Academy. I am obsessed with writing books and publishing and self-publishing, and I've learned how to support would-be authors in the process. Make sure you go to the show notes to click on the link to go to the Academy. You can also go to michelleismoneyhungry.com/Academy to go and check it out. Think about all of the tools that have been created to help people manage their money in the 2000 era, like the, 2009 and beyond, we'll say. Things like Ibotta for saving on groceries and booze, Acorns for investing in small increments, platforms such as Elvest to help women get started with investing with literally a $0 minimum. The internet has opened up access to these tools and resources, and it's wonderful because there are a number of people who would otherwise be left out in the cold without them. If you have a cell phone, basically, you can access these tools. I'm actually a member of a number of different financial groups that have cropped up online. And I can tell you that from the conversations that I'm having in those groups, that there's a need that's not being met in other spaces. They're very nuanced. They're very specific to community. And I wanted to kind of share the different groups that I belong to and what I've observed. So I belong to a group called Elevate Community. It was created by Sandy Smith, who's a friend of mine. And that group is specifically for influencers in the personal finance space, influencers of color in the personal finance space. She created that space because we just were finding that there were really specific conversations that people of color were needing to have that weren't necessarily always being addressed in other groups. And quite honestly, I get it. If you've never had an experience with having access denied, how can you even consider that it's an issue out there? But we have had that experience. We've had that experience in our families, directly in our own personal lives. So we were like, this seems like a good idea. And it has grown beyond, I think, Sandy's wildest dreams. It's an amazing community for people who are creating other communities, specifically serving people of color and who are looking for personal finance content created by people who may or may not look like them. Ironically, for my platform, mine is very, very diverse. I have, 50% millennials, 50% Gen X. I have, I would say, quite honestly, 40% black, 40% white, 20% other. So it's, my platform is really diverse. However, there's other platforms where it's like, we serve Latinas, that's who we serve, and that's who we need to find. There's other platforms where they're speaking with Asian Americans, African Americans, Caribbean Americans, like it just depends. But there are a lot of conversations being had in those spaces created by these influencers of color. So it's really cool. It's a really cool place to be in. I'm also in the Women's Personal Finance, Women on Fire, not literally, a community filled with women from all walks of life who are pursuing financial independence, retire early. What I love about that group is there's a deep focus on respect, on emotional support, on feedback and guidance. I feel like those things really are at the heart of the communications within the community. You can post anonymously about a financial situation that you're finding yourself in. I'm not married at this point in time. And for me, it's a really interesting snapshot into couples' money, the dynamics between couples, especially when they're balanced, where you can tell that the spouses are really doing a good job of communicating. And then there's other times when I'm like, oh my God, this person's really at risk, where we will have women post in the group about a situation where it's clear that they are suffering some kind of financial abuse, or it's just on the borderline of like, this is not okay. So it's a space where women who are like, we want to change our financial lives. We would like financial independence, but we have $300,000 worth of debt. We've got kids. We've got all these things going on. What's our first step? And I love this group because no one goes in there and is like, oh my God, I can't believe you did this, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's not the group. What they do is they're like, okay, this is what you've described. Here's some feedback. Here's some food for thought. Here's some tools that you can use. And so I love the group. It's really well moderated. And I think that they do a good job of making sure people are being heard, which for all of these groups is the number one, I think, area of focus, is being heard and validated as you express what you're expressing about money and your personal situation. Women of Color Pursuing FIRE, that's another group. I think I mangled the actual name of the group because it's a private group, but this is a group for, again, women of color who are pursuing financial independence, retire early. Similar to the Women's Personal Finance group, the conversations are guided by compassion, empathy, active listening. And what I love about that group is more often than not, conversations about how people's extended families affect their money that's brought up. It's not an unusual thing in that group to have that come up. And for people to say, okay, I'm in that same situation, and this is what I'm doing so that I'm okay and my relatives are okay. There's no one going, oh my God, I can't believe you're helping your family and blah, blah, blah. Like, there's no judgment. It just is a statement. This is what we're doing. This is how we're approaching it. The end. So I love that group for so many reasons. And the other reason is because there's a whole bunch of people who look like me and my other friends from all walks of life. Again, Black, Latina, Asian, Southeast Asian, what have you, African. And it's so fun to be in that group and kind of experience all of us moving towards this audacious thing, which is financial independence. I belong to Choose FI Denver, even though they annoyed me the other week, but we won't get into that. But I like the group because it is focused on intersection between location and money. So I think that sometimes there's a nuance missed where your money is totally affected by where you live, like literally where you live. So with FIRE, where people are really trying to live a certain way, how can you do that in a state that's expensive? Colorado is not cheap. I still don't understand why people think it is. It's not cheap here. It might have certain things that are cheaper than other places, but then you have to factor in the lifestyle. So skiing is not cheap. Skiing is expensive. Camping, if you don't have equipment, like getting outfitted for that, that's expensive until you like the initial investment. So my point is being in a group like this and having people talk about the different neighborhoods they're looking at, different concerns that they have. If they have dogs and they're moving to the city, what does that mean? I don't have dogs. I don't have to factor that in, but it costs money to move with your dogs into an apartment because you have to pay like either a deposit or a monthly fee or both in order to have your pets. So stuff like that, that can be really specific to the city. So it's really interesting being a part of that community because it's very much based on geography. So when we talk about this narrative about money, it's really, you know, this whole idea that you just have to save your money and invest it over time. It's frustrating because I find that the nuances of people's actual lived experiences sometimes get lost in the shuffle. Personal finance is personal. Many personal finance content creators may not have ever experienced issues with access, as I've mentioned before. And the question becomes, how can you write about something you've never experienced? Maybe you don't even think it's real. And honestly, based on the comments that I've seen online, it's clear that a lot of people don't think it's real and they think that people are victim blaming or being a victim of this alleged situation. And it's just interesting to observe. People are craving validation of their personal financial experiences and points of view by seeking out these communities. And if they weren't, why would they create these communities? If everything was fine, there would be no need for them. Clearly, there's a need for something is happening and these needs aren't being addressed in other spaces, which is why these communities are coming up. Food for thought. So I'm going to share some of my lived experiences for those of you who've been following my financial journey. Some are you're familiar with, some you're not. My parents divorced when I was about 6.5, 7 years old. My dad, though, declared bankruptcy at the time and screwed my mom. Figuratively, ew. And she went from being a stay-at-home mom for 7 years to having to become the primary caregiver for 2 people. Yeah, fun times. My mom worked several jobs at a time while attending university and having a kid. I remember her working at Safeway 1 year, in addition to other little jobs that she had. What I didn't know until recently was that she had fed a man for a year with the food that was being thrown out each night. So at Safeway and other grocery stores, they have that pre-made food, the prepared foods. And she noticed this man living in his car in the parking lot. So the entire year that she was working there, and mind you, we had nothing. She could have lost her job for this. She fed that man. By the way, that was a white man who had been a lawyer and just something had happened. His life changed and he was living in his car and she fed him for a year. That is something I think about, her compassion. We might get on each other's nerves a lot because that's mothers and daughters, but the kind of person my mom is, it's like I aspire to live up to her standards. I started working when I was 16 years old after begging my mom for permission to work. I've never babysat other people's kids, things like that, not as a young person, not as a teenager. And my mom was like, finally, like I wore her down. And she goes, once you start working, you'll never stop. And it was funny because she talked about all the soft skills needed to be like a fabulous employee. She talked about, you know, your word is your bond, showing up on time, don't gossip, like all those things that are so important that actually right now people are really crap at. But we didn't have conversations like, Michelle, make sure you save 20% of your income, 20% of your check each time you get a check. Start thinking about retirement. Like none of those conversations happened. And the reason why, quite honestly, besides the fact that we struggled the entire time I was growing up, is no one had that conversation with her. She never had a conversation like that. Interestingly, though, in our family, like many African-American families, it was very common to have relatives live with you. And when she was younger, she had relatives living in her home. And they would save up their money and then they would buy their own homes. So she recalls, she's told me this, one of her uncles and aunts, like they were living with them and married couple, and her uncle would maybe worked as a waiter or something. And every night he would get his tips and he would roll them into, you know, coin like rolls, and then deposit that money. And eventually he was able to buy a home. So she saw some of this. There were people who had businesses in our family, that kind of thing. But in her immediate family, a conversation like that just wasn't happening. And so if you don't grow up with that and you're just surviving, how is it that you even intuit to have this conversation with your kids? Okay. Like just, I'm keeping it real. It's going to be different for me. I have been writing about money for years. I'm going to be an old freaking mom when I'm finally married and have kids. And in Denver, there's literally a bank called the Young Americans Bank that's only for children. It's a bank for birth to 18 years old. So everything is created with children in mind. So I already know that I will have my kids bank there so that they will understand what banking is. And I love it. I love that resource. I have friends who've had kids bank there and it's just awesome. But I only got into this because of an accident. I started reading blogs about money. The only reason why I even got into this was because I got so fed up and I was trying to figure out why I wasn't getting things right and what was going on. And I should also say, like, there's personal habits, there's access, and then there's mindset. But for the purpose of this episode, I'm going to keep it simple. College. Each year, I was called into the financial aid office to sign my financial aid check. So I had grants and loans and all this kind of thing. And every year, I'll never forget that first year too, because it was such a large check. Like I couldn't believe this huge check had my name on it. And I would go in and I signed my name. And they would apply all that money towards my accommodation to, you know, room and board, my meal card, and to my tuition. So every year I would sign up or go in and sign that. And then I would get about $2,000 back in cash to do what I wanted. In fact, I'm surprised at schools that would just give students the entire amount, like that, a large amount of money, I would have messed it up. So I'm really thankful to the school for doing it that way, or else I would have just frittered all that cash away. Senior year, we had a maid when I was a senior in college because of the dorms that I lived in. So we all lived in a certain section of campus, like all the seniors were allocated certain dormitories. And I lived in a 5-bedroom apartment. And every week we had someone who came in to clean. This was the thing for the whole, like, this is a pretty big area of housing on campus. And you actually had to walk across a long bridge to even get to the senior section on campus. And every week someone would come in, they would mop, they would tidy real quick, and then they would change the toilet paper roll, like one of those giant toilet paper rolls in our bathroom, and clean the bathroom. For a year I had a maid in college. Now that makes no sense. Okay. No sense. But I don't, you know, obviously we this was paid for out of our, you know, room and board, but it makes no sense. I didn't have a job. I had a part-time job, but I didn't have a job to be paying a mate. What? So that was one of my financial experiences. I will say that, God, I wish I had someone coming in to clean my place now. It's too small. I just cannot justify it. But any of you moms out there who's like, oh, I don't know if I should have. Yes, you should. You should have someone come in and do all the heavy cleaning if your kids are too small to do it. Once they're bigger, they can do it. Not they'll learn discipline. But when they're little, pay the money. If you have a little extra to do it, pay the money. That's a side note. And during college, I would also get my first credit cards. I got a Visa and an Express clothing store card. Weirdly enough, I still like Express. but unfortunately, I didn't have financial skills. So I maxed those out. I had horrible experiences with money. I messed up my credit. It was just a disaster. And it just snowballed from there. It was a disaster. And those are some of my lived experiences. Just a itty bitty, teeny tiny little screenshot of my financial life. I didn't share how other people affected my ability to grow my income within my professional roles that I worked. I didn't share how I didn't know how to negotiate my wage, and no one told me that I should. I didn't share how maybe I didn't get guidance on retirement and the way that I think big organizations really should provide when they are matching funds for retirements. So there's a lot that I didn't share because there's so much going on in that conversation. I didn't share, even though I did in a previous episode, how I had financial allies. I just stumbled upon these people who really helped me to do certain things like purchase my home. If I did, I will only ever work with my realtor that I worked with to purchase this home because of the care that she showed me and the respect that I received as we went through that process. And I know a lot of people never had that experience or didn't have that experience when they were purchasing a home. So there were all these things, these financial decisions that I didn't like quite even understand that they were major financial decisions that were really impacted by other people, that other 20%. At the heart of Michelle is Money Hungry. The goal is to help my readers and podcast listeners gain access to conversations, tools, and financial mindsets that would be difficult to access potentially in their home, town, or community. There is a reason why I speak with so many people making money selling what they already know online. Then I share the intangibles of money related to money, related to mindset, access, and knowledge. That's another piece. Even if you've never had a lack of access experience, I think it's important for you to be open to the fact that your lived financial experience is not everyone's. That doesn't make you a bad person. It just is a statement of fact. That's it. And I get weirded out by people getting so emotional when people are just stating facts. Don't let it go. Like, you don't need to feel guilty if you haven't had these experiences. Just acknowledge that you haven't and move from there. It's not to make you feel bad. It's just to be like, look, dudette, this is my experience. I'm glad that you haven't had to have this, but we need to have this conversation. It's totally okay to not react in shame about this. But if you do react in shame for some reason, understand why. When thinking about access, here are some things to consider. At least twice a month in one of the women's financial groups that I belong to, whether it's a white woman, Black woman, Asian, Latina, what have you, there will be a woman who will share that their husband has taken away their access to their money in 2020. Equal pay day for women has been created for a reason, and they break down when white women's earnings hit parity, equal earnings with white men, black women, Asian women, Latinas, Native American women. Like, they break it down how long it takes for people to earn the amount that their white colleagues may earn. It's a fact. It just is what it is. Equal pay day exists for a reason. We're experiencing worldwide Black Lives Matter protest. The second area of focus, aside from police violence and the state of policing in the U.S., is a conversation specific to financial equality and equity and access. People are just discovering the 1921 Tulsa race massacre and how generational wealth was destroyed in Tulsa and beyond as a result of what happened and transpired during that massacre. Please note, that's not the only town that this happened in. There are other African American towns that were destroyed for the same reason. They were thriving and it pissed people off. It just is what it is. It's just a fact. We're in a pandemic and women with children are being put in the position of deciding if they can work or if they need to stop working in order to care for their children, because during a pandemic, people don't want to be sending their kids to school, or schools don't want your kids there. Things have changed. Not only are they grappling with that, they're now trying to figure out how can we afford the cost of childcare and work during the pandemic. So maybe they're single or their spouse isn't earning a lot, whatever, and they both have to work. How do you afford this? It would not surprise me if we look at the expense for childcare from now until 2021, summer of 2021, and it goes up. How do you afford that? That is an access issue, because if I can't have my kids cared for, how can I work? How can I leave the house? Like, that's just common sense. It's not even an argument. It's just common sense. It's an access issue. Some communities don't even have banks or ATMs, and mindset in community is so important when focusing on finances. There's a reason why I loved connecting with people online about money, because I was able to really surround myself with people who were trying to do the same thing, and I didn't have to argue why I was trying to do it. Fortunately, we have some solutions to the problem of access, that 20%. Share these communities with people needing a community of like-minded people. So if you have a friend who's like, God, you know, like, I'm really trying to do this thing, and my mom and dad, they keep like poo-pooing my ideas, and it's really frustrating, let them know about a community that's a good fit for them. It may not be the ones that you're in, but if there's other ones that you're like, this is a good fit for so-and-so, let them know about it. Talk about digital tools that people can access from their phones, such as online banking, savings apps, investing apps, budgeting tools such as Personal Capital and Mint, LVEST for investing, and more. Let people know about that. They can't use what they don't know exists. If you have kids about to go to college, if you're about to go to college, if you are a non-traditional student going to college, don't forget to access Scholly, which is an app created by a young African-American guy who basically was looking for scholarships, and he created this app. And this app is amazing because it gives you so much access to all this money that you never would have known about without it. So use Scholly to find apps. Or to find scholarships via that app. Understand the importance of financial gatekeepers. Know who to connect with and how to support people based on the role that you have at work. I'll share the link to the episode that I recorded the other week in the show notes called Financial Allies and Why They're So Important. They're really important. Without my realtor, I don't know that I would have purchased as wisely as I did. Share your financial story. There's a reason why I continue to share my story. My story is messy. My credit isn't even that good right now. It's still a hot mess in my view. Okay? Really, I'm being candid. I'm not looking to borrow money anytime soon, so I have time to clean it up. But the reality is, it's taken a long time for me to get my finances to where they are now, and it's been really hard. But I feel like it's so important to share the story, share the tips, share the ideas, share the wins and the losses and everything in between, so that if you're experiencing the same thing, you'll understand you're not alone. You're not alone, and things will get better. My experience is bigger than me, and I think that it is doing people a disservice not to share so that they're empowered too with their money. It's time to have these nuanced conversations about money. It's super lazy, in my view, to only talk about the mechanics of money, the habits of money, the emotion of money, the ability to negotiate for more, an employee's ability to affect an employee's earnings. Taxes and more are huge topics that require constant reflection and commentary. And if you're unable to do some of that, bring other people onto your platform who can. That's the whole point of building these platforms. You don't know everything. There's a reason why I have other guests. I don't know everything. I'm still learning. I am still a work in progress, period. And so are you. And that's a good thing. That's why you should continue to learn your whole life. So no one's asking you to have all the answers. What we're asking is that you acknowledge that there's more than one experience. Everyone's experience is valid. And when you don't know a thing, bring in someone else. That easy. Money isn't just about avocado toast and overspending on shoes. If you're willing to talk money, be willing to have deeper conversations. Remember, the 3.5% rule can change your world. The 20% access issue can mess your world up. Thank you for listening to the show. Please share your comments below. Please like and subscribe. And I'm excited because this week I'm sharing an interview or two that I've already recorded. So just keep an ear out for that. Stay safe. Wash your hands. Talk to you later.